Alrighty, so I want to do something about, about tshuva, I guess about avelos. So, essentially one idea, but we'll see what happens here. So it's a perek in Hilchos Avel, perek Yud Gimel Halacha Yud Beis. Okay, so it says like this. Kol mi sheinu misavel kmo shesivu chachamim, har zeh achzari. So anyone who does not mourn in line with the way the Chacham commanded, okay, Shiva, Shloshim, the whole deal, is cruel. He's an achzar, he's cruel. Okay. Ella, rather, it's funny exactly what the rather is, but rather, Yifchar, he should be frightened, V'yidayig, and he should be worried, V'yifashvesh v'maisav. He should seek into his actions. The yachzer b'tshuva. He should return in tshuva. Ve'echav neich burshameis. And if one of a group of friends or a group passes, dies, they die kalach v'rkol. The entire group should be worried. Kol shloshe yom harishonim, for all the first 3 days, yira es atzmo ki ilcherev munachas l'akseifa. He should view it as if there is a sword on his shoulder. Mishlosha ve'ad shiva, v'nachas keren zavis. From 3 to 7, the sword is now in the place in the corner. Okay, in the corner. Okay, place in the corner. Mikan ve'elech overs kenei d'vashar. From there on in, it is passing by him in the street, in the marketplace. Kol zeh. All of this is to prepare himself to the tshuva, to return, and to awaken him from his sleep, right, to arouse him from his sleep. And the pasuk says, "Hikisa osam v'lochalu." I hit them, and they didn't become sick. So you see, apparently, you're supposed to be wake up and become sick. Feel sick. Okay, that's the Rambam. Any questions? Yeah, okay, so the first question you're just saying is, well, what's the deal with the sword? I mean, what does it mean? You have a sword chasing you around? I mean, it's pretty strange. Would you imagine that? Like, is there a reality to that? Like, is it like, so to speak, you're more likely to die within your period of mourning than in some other time in your life? I mean, I don't know that that's true. And it's like you're imagining this, or seeing it. And you know, in order to prepare yourself for tshuva. Yeah, but is there reality to it? What do? You just imagine it? I mean, is that... What kind of thing is that? I mean, you're fooling yourself, or are you? Or is there... If there... I guess to... Either it's true, then you have to explain, what does that mean? You're more likely... Is there really a sword on your shoulder now? Or it's not true, then what are you doing? You're just imagining it in order for you to do tshuva? And for... It's like a trick. It's not true. Okay. And what's the progression, right? Of course, you're saying... implicit in that is there's some sort of a progression, right? It would be nice if you could understand that. Okay. So it's one question. The Rindy asks, yeah, but if someone from a group dies, then you should see yourself, you should be worried. The whole group should be worried. I mean, what does that mean? Does it mean a family member? Like one of the Krovmu you mourn for? All of a sudden now it becomes like a group. Sounds like a peer group or something. I mean, it could include your family, but it sounds like it's an extended group. But mourning isn't for that. Right, avelus is not for your friends and for your peer group. There's no halacha like that. Mourning is for your 7 krovim. Right? So what does that mean? Okay. I mean, well, so what does that do with avelus? Isn't avelus mourning? How exactly does this fit into avelus? Right, avelus? What? The fear, all this, even the tshuva. I mean, this whole deal. I mean, isn't mourning like a mourning? morning, thinking about the lost loved one, whatever. I mean, what's the... How's Ram slipping this in into Avelis? Sounds like it's, you know... So if you don't mourn like the Chum say, you're an Avel. You're cruel. Rather, you should do... rather, you should mourn like the Chum say. No, rather, you should be afraid and all that. How does that exactly fit together? Right, also, right, what does it mean, Achzar? Why are you an Achzar? I mean, I understand you're not doing the halacha properly, but what does it mean you're an Achzar? I mean, Rinzi is asking, is it says he has 3 days, then from 3 to 7, and then we come to Eileth, it's like passing you on the shuk. He doesn't say until when. So the Radvaz says it means until 12 months. It seems that way from the Yishami. But it is interesting the Ram doesn't say that. I mean, you could just say he expects you to figure it out. When else? What else could he possibly mean? But it's interesting. It's an interesting point. Right. Does it mean your entire life? I mean, it doesn't seem that way. But at the same time, the Rambam is delineating the times. And it's a little bit vague. I mean, Shoshim, Yibes Chodesh. I mean, it could be vague because, look, sometimes Shoshim, Yibes Chodesh depends on whether it's father or mother or, you know. You could just say he left it open-ended. Okay, but it's a good question. No, the Rambam. So let's look at this pasuk a little bit. So because the Rambam is seemingly, he has to prove it. Apparently the Rambam holds that he wants to prove that a person should be doing tshuva during this time period. Because he brings a pasuk. Right? And it says, he kiso some velochalu, I hit them and they didn't become sick. Michlal, you could derive from here that you're supposed to wake up and be sick. So he's trying to prove it from this pasuk, right? I mean, how are you? He's bringing it as a support and deducing, or giving support for his idea. So apparently, he holds it doesn't stand on its own, or at least there's a pasuk which kind of indicates that what he's saying is true. So let's look at the pasuk. So it's Yirmiyahu, Perakei. Okay. So it says like this. So let me, I'll read it in English. It'll just make things easier. It's Pasuk Hay. So, let me just read a few psukim from the beginning of the parak in English. Okay, so it says like this. Stroll in the streets of Jerusalem, and see now and know, and seek in its squares, whether you will find a man, whether there is one who performs justice, who seeks faith, and I will forgive her. In other words, look around, see if you can find anybody who's really just, who's really seeking out God and seeking out justice. And if they say, as the Lord lives, or if they swear, they nevertheless will swear falsely. They lie, they swear falsely, they say Shem Hashem, sounds like they're quoting, they're saying things in the name of God, but they're liars. They say they lie, they swear falsely. O Lord, are not your eyes upon faith? Hashem, Einecha, Alola Emuna. Aren't your eyes upon Emuna? Faith? Something like that? Hikiso Osam. This is our pasuk. Hikiso Osam, Velo Chalu. You smote them, but they felt no pain. Kilisam. You have consumed them. Me'anu Kachas Musar. But they refuse to take Musar. To take a correction. Chizku Paneham Misela. They made their faces harder than a rock. Me'ano Lashov. They refused to do tshuva. And then I'm reading more in the English. And I said, but they are poor, they have become foolish, for they did not know the way of the Lord, the judgments of their God. Lord Jimio is defending them. Look, they didn't know. They're foolish. I will go to the great ones and speak with them. To the Chachamim or whatever. For they will know the way of the Lord, their judgment of God. But they together broke the yoke, burst the bands. Didn't work. They also, they grouped together and they just they threw away the yoke of heaven. Therefore, a lion from the forest smote them, a wolf of the desert spoils them, a leopard hastens upon their cities. Anyone who comes out of them shall be torn to pieces, for their transgressions are many, their backslidings are increased. So on and so forth. Okay, the parak goes on and on and on. Talks about how, you know, their downfall and their sins and their punishments. So we're talking about Klal Yisrael, basically Jerusalem, sinful people. God is smiting them, right? Smiting them, punishing them, but they're not noticing it. They're not taking, they're not doing tshuva, right? They're not taking musar. They're not doing, right? They're not recognizing it. They're hard like a rock. Okay? They should have been aroused by God hitting them. Right? It's interesting. It says, just on the beginning part of the pasuk. I mean, the part of the pasuk which is not clear what it's even saying. It says, Hashem enecha halo la'amuna. You aren't your eyes upon faith, on emunah. And then you hit them, but they didn't respond. So, well, what's that even mean? So the Radak explains, it says that your eyes means your hashkacha. So it means your hashkacha, your providence. Your providence to people is for some purpose, for kiyam. Emunah, he means it's for some purpose, not for an ought. God intervenes in this world, it's for some objective, something which will last. Right? And you hit them for their maisim haram, but it didn't do anything. So why'd you do it? What did your hashkacha do? Right? It's like it was almost like for nothing. So it means Hashem, your eyes are on doing things that have permanence, that have lasting effects, and you're doing hashkacha, you're punishing them in order presumably to arouse them to tshuva, and they didn't listen. So it's like, what are you accomplishing? Right? It's like their whole... The whole thing is these guys are—they're not even moving.
Rabbi.
Yeah.
What's funny?
Now that we have these pesukim, I mean, they could use their own analysis, but let's say now that we have these pesukim, is this the Rambam's trying to prove our case? So he says he's talking about someone who suffers a loss, personal loss, one of their krovim becomes an avel. So he says you have to do tshuva, right? They're supposed to do tshuva, they should think of the sword above them on the street and all that. All this is to awaken them, to rouse them to tshuva. And it says, the pasuk says, I hit them and they didn't become sick. At this pasuk, God says, I hit them and I smote them and they didn't become sick. So you see, apparently, they're supposed to become sick. They're supposed to be aroused. So that's how he deduces his halacha. Good deduction. So I think the question is that they're not really comparable. Because one of them we're talking about Klal Yisrael, who are, so to speak, supposed to enjoy the Hashkachas Hashem and to be protected by God. They're the chosen nation of God to represent God and Kiddush Hashem and all that. And they are sinful, and God punishes them, and tragedies happen to Klal Yisrael. So that's clearly hashkacha, like the Navi's saying, is God doing hashkacha to make you do tshuva. It's an action which is, so to speak, if Klal Yisrael suffers tragedies, so that's hashkacha Hashem. Because that's not supposed to happen. If we were righteous, that wouldn't happen. If we were righteous, there'd be hashkacha and we'd be protected. But it's indicative of punishment. So therefore, that's what it's saying, is hikisa asem velozcha, which means, is I hid them... Obviously, to wake them up, and they didn't wake up, and that's what the Navi's saying. Is that God's hitting them for no, nobody's even questioning, what are you doing it for? Because clearly it's a hit to Klal Yisrael, which is Hashkacha, and therefore, obviously they should wake up. Because, like the Rambam says in Hilchos Tainus, that if a tragedy happens, you have to turn to God and follow and recognize that it's from God, it's not for just accidents. Klal Yisrael isn't under just chance accidents, but what happens to Klal Yisrael is Hashkacha. And if you say it's an accident, then God's going to make it worse. So the whole idea is, Klal, if God hits them, yeah, that's they have to wake up. That's the idea. Right? That's what lets them remove the tragedies. But here we're talking about a regular person whose relative dies. Any regular person, any relative dies. Right, it may be a tragedy, it may be a young person who is at a long life out of them who passed on, it may be a person who's 120 years old. But the idea is, this is just a tragedy, this is a death. In fact, the Rambam, the previous halacha, says a person, it says, Al yiskasha adam al meso, yes, I mean, die. A person shouldn't be harden himself on his dead relative more too much. Right, I'm skipping a little bit, she says, Yom HaGashal Olam, because that's a minig olam. Life and death, this is the way of the world. No one's living forever. So a person has to take mourning in stride. sad, but at the same time, life goes on. It's, so to speak, it's supposed to happen. It's a minigolem. The timing may be a little bit differently than you had planned, but it's supposed to happen. And even though you may not have planned it to time that way, this is the way it's supposed to be. But it is not supposed to be that Klal Yisrael has a terrible onshem, that Klal Yisrael loses the Mikdash or whatever a terrible onshem Klal Yisrael has. It's not supposed to be that way. It's supposed to be that Klal Yisrael has the protection of God. And it's if they're being hit, it's not supposed to be. It's because God's hitting them, because they're Yichotim, and therefore it's a signal to wake up. So therefore that Pasuk is saying, God's saying, I hit them, you hit them, but they didn't wake up, they didn't feel sick. Michal, you could deduce that they had to feel sick. They're supposed to. Yeah, they are supposed to. Klal Yisrael, but not an individual guy who suffers a personal loss of a relative. How does that follow from this pasuk? Right? Right. Like, or for instance, also, it's like it says you should think of the sword going in the street. And, I mean, is the sword, a guy dies, is necessarily the sword is coming after him? And, I mean, maybe he just died because he was very old, and he was in his hundreds, and he just became old, and he became sick, and that's... I mean, now all of a sudden, there's a sword chasing you? I mean, how does that follow? Yeah, Klal Yisrael, I understand the sword. If Klal Yisrael gets hit, they should think of the sword. Because it means, obviously, God's punishing them, and who's next? If you don't do tshuva, you're next. Because it's Onesh. It's clearly Onesh. Klal Yisrael getting hit is Onesh. So you gotta worry, there's a sword chasing you around. But I mean, an individual guy's relative dies, that's an onesh against you, and hey, you better do tshuva, otherwise you're next. Is that true? Isn't there such a thing as life and death? Good question. Josh has a good question. It's like, what does it mean? You're thinking a guy, your relative dies, now you have to think and do tshuva. So yeah, I understand Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael gets punished. So yeah, Klal Yisrael has to do tshuva. Klal Yisrael has to do tshuva. It's a punishment to the klal, we're a nation, we're a group. But does it mean like, well, your friend dies, now you have to do tshuva? I mean, would it be he died because of your sin? Who said? Maybe he died because of his sin. Or maybe he just died because he was sick, or because it was his time. Like, how is the natural response that I'm doing tshuva for his thing? Makes sense by Klal Yisrael, because the person who's being hit is the person who has to do tshuva, the unit of the klal. But once it's an individual, do we say when someone dies it's a punishment against their group, against their family, and therefore like it's I'm responsible and I have to do tshuva now? Good question. Excellent. Okay, something like this. I'm putting together a lot of your guys' thoughts, but I'm looking at the pasuk. There's an important... Maybe it's based on the careful reading of the pasuk. But it says, I hit them, or you hit them, and they didn't become sick. Right? They refused. You hit the, to consume them, and they refused to take musa. They strengthened their faces more than a rock. They refused to do tshuva. So what does it mean they didn't become sick? The Rambam's quoting, I believe, they didn't become sick. What does it mean they become sick? Rashi says, Lo nasu cholam al hamaka. They didn't become sick for on the hit. Lishol alibam lashav something lashav alibam lashav meirasam to return to do the tshuva. So what does it mean they become sick? What does that mean you become sick? Why are you becoming sick? Right. So I think it means is there's a certain sickness that a person could experience when a tragedy happens. And the sickness stems from, I guess you could say, from his illusion being smashed, being shattered. Like there's a certain way a person lives and a certain assumption of his own righteousness or of his own immortality. Or of his own, his own doing the right thing, the right path. Like it talks about these guys, is that they may swear about Hashem Hashem, and they may swear in the name of God, but they're lying. So there's a certain idea, is when God or a person feels he's God's chosen nation. Klal Yisrael feels that we're the chosen nation of God. Nothing could happen to us. And the hit should cause them to become sick, to feel sick. It's not just that they... It's not just there should be an intellectual recognition that, oh, this must be an onesh, I have to do tshuva. But there's like a... There's an emotion of being hit and you're being stricken and it throws you. It should throw you... It should wake you up. Like Anas says, it should wake you up. There's a slumber. The person is asleep. The Jewish people were asleep. They forgot. They fell into a slumber where they forgot about truth and reality, and they followed a path of corruption, idolatry, and all different types of of sins. And the hit should wake them up, should frighten them, should make them feel sick. They should take the mussar. But on the contrary, they hardened themselves like a rock. They didn't become sick. On the contrary, they had the opposite emotional response. They refused to do tshuva. But there's, see, the blow, see, a person becomes hardened. It's his nature to become asleep and to be fall into a world of non-reality and to become stuck in that world. And the person as such, in order to do tshuva, a person needs to be woken up and needs to be put in a painful emotional state where he... Like a wake-up call. A day which reminds him, which makes him sick. You feel sick about yourself. And you realize, this is all... I was wasting my time. I was doing terrible things. I was corrupt. I was living some sort of a fantasy. And that feeling of sickness, that feeling, is a natural feeling that a person has when the tragedy happens or when the onesh happens. And a person should utilize that as it's like almost like his only tool to do tshuva. Not the only tool, but it's a very good tool to use your feeling of sickness about yourself and of this wake up and use it to reflect. Because if you don't reflect now, you're not going to reflect when you're asleep. You reflect when you're awake. But now's your chance. You got to wake up and you got to think into your life. Take the mussar. But don't go back to sleep or harden yourself like a rock and refuse to take But the idea is, v'lo chalu, the Navi is depicting that they were hit and they didn't feel sick. It means the appropriate response. There is a natural response. And if you don't harden yourself, you're going to have it. If you're not an achzar, if you don't take on a hard shell of cruelty and turn yourself away from tragedy, then you're going to feel it. You're going to feel it. But you could choose to refuse to stay asleep and to distance yourself from the tragedy, to ignore it, to somehow step aside and pretend like it doesn't, to prevent that emotional reaction. If a person does that, he's an achza. If a person doesn't mourn, there's a natural, I'm segueing here, when a person's relative passes, there's a natural, he identifies with his relative. He loves his relative. He feels like he's part of the group, or even a chabura, a group, a peer group. There should be a natural feeling of, it throws a person. Because a person gets by on a daily basis by assuming that he's going to keep living. That these things don't happen, these things can't happen. It's kind of what allows us to function on a day-to-day basis. No person really thinks moment to moment that he could die on a split second, that there's a sword over his shoulder. But I think, as Yonah said, it's true. Swords over, always over your shoulder. Swords mean there's a din. There's an idea of din and of justice and of the reality of the tenuous nature of your existence. And there's really always a sword over your shoulder. Is there anyone who could say that they're confident that they're not going to die right now? Can't really. I mean, maybe the odds are low, but someone's dying right now, and there's no real reason why it can't be you, or me, or anyone. There's always a sword, but it's depressing. A person can't live like that. Can't have a productive life like that. So you have to choose to ignore it. But the problem is, when you choose to ignore it, so then you end up falling. That is real. And if you really had that mindset, you would be avoid chayt. But you also wouldn't be able to live. It just a person can't function like that. So you have to ignore it. But by ignoring it there's unwanted consequences that you could fall into bad paths. because you're not always thinking about that, so now you somehow believe you can live forever. And now you pursue endless wealth and fame and all kinds of stuff, which doesn't really make sense in the context and in a realistic view of reality. But we fall asleep, and when a person is mourning, he should naturally become sick and wake up, and he should realize, oy vey, this could happen to me. I'm also mortal. In my life, it shakes a person into realizing the tenuous nature of life. And if it doesn't, then you're an oxar and you're cruel. It's like you've taken a hike, like they did in the pasuk. They hardened themselves harder than a rock. They refuse to accept anything. And that's like cruelty.
Can you just explain what that oxar is?
Well, I think the way you do it is like you totally cut off. I think I've heard Rebbe say this. I think in the name of the Rav, that achzar comes from achzar. He's but a stranger. Ach is but, zar is a stranger. So it means the way you do it is like you have to, so to speak, cut your ties from the guy and dissociate yourself from him. And there's natural association and identification. And the way in which you do it is you, so to speak, you distance yourself. Yeah, he died. It happened to him. But me... Yeah, I'm younger. He must have had some sort of genetic problem. He must have whatever. I mean, everyone's always looking for the reason of how the person died and why it can't happen to them, right? Was he sick? Was he this? Was he that? There's always some excuse of why it's him and not me. So there's an idea. Naturally, though, you don't do that by your relative because you identify with your relative, so therefore it really wakes you up. Although some random guy in the street dies, oh yeah, he's part of the dying club. But not me, I'm part of the living club. But if it's your family member or your group, then all of a sudden it awakens you. But you could still close yourself off and distance, break your tie to him and say, I'm me, and forget about it. And you have to, like, you take on a hard exterior where you separate yourself from the event. By the way, and that's why the connection, because the way you do it is the way you protect yourself is that you distance yourself from the guy who died. But then you're not going to mourn. See, the mourning is because you're mourning is because you feel strongly and closely and you identify with the guy, and therefore you're mourning. But the natural parallel to that is that you are going to feel your own mortality and it's going to wake you up. So if a guy doesn't mourn, right, they go together. The mourning of the loss also will make you feel like, it means you're identifying with him, and that will make you feel the pain and it will shake you up. If you're not feeling the pain and you're not shaken up, it must be you're not mourning. You can't simultaneously mourn and not feel the natural response. They go hand in hand. The mourning is your feeling close to him, and you're bringing up those feelings, and it's only natural to feel I'm like him. And this could happen to me. And the thing is that the response, therefore, is to basically to not shut down that identification, but to identify. That's just an Ella Yivchad, you should worry. And you should worry. But I think, as Yonah says, correct, you should always be worried. It's not a new worry. It doesn't mean that now all of a sudden, now God's after you. It doesn't necessarily mean that. I mean, maybe that was the case in Onesh Tachal Yisrael, but it's the same way God's after you always, so to speak, which means there's always a reality of your own death. It's just that insofar as the emotion is strong, this feeling, this strong feeling of sickness or of being awoken up, it starts there and it slowly wanes. And you could use it insofar as it's appropriate to use it to help you do tshuva. Because a person should always do tshuva, but somehow you don't have these opportunities. So what it's saying is that it means that the 3 days and the 7 days, I think it just means is like that's the way a person feels. There's a transition. There is a slow, it's appropriate to be in touch with the emotion and to utilize it as it is. In the first 3 days, the person feels its strongest. And there's a certain appropriate response and appropriate mindset a person should be thinking of. And he slowly, I mean, it could be that's why, it could be is that's why David's question is, Mikan ve'elach l'reshtenag d'vashok, it passes by in the street from there on in. Maybe it does mean forever. Means the person in theory always could have that idea. That death passes you in the street. It means it's there. It's out there. It's not in the corner of your house, but is passed by in the street means from time to time you think about it. So maybe you never put the sword away. I'm not sure. Maybe you put it away after 12 months, like the Rav Baz is saying, but it could be he leaves it open-ended. It means there is a certain... There could be an indelible imprint on a person of the passing of a loved one, which a person who's never had a karov pass could be doesn't have the same... doesn't have it on this. It doesn't have a sword in the past Mayim in the street. But the experience itself could be... it creates a certain type of a thing, and maybe you shouldn't ever get rid of it totally. You have to get rid of it to the point where you can function. But it should always be there ready to take out when you need it, so to speak.
It shouldn't be undone.
Right, it shouldn't be undone. It should. It's if the whole thing works for 3 days, then your tshuva, I mean, look, your tshuva for Mavelos doesn't necessarily have to take place during the shiva. It could be that's the best time to do it. But it could be, it could stimulate it and it could carry on for a future. It could make its mark for later times. And you can keep the sword out, keep the sword around, then let me pass you on the street, so to speak. It's the coming face to face with death is something which is scary, but it's important for a person to be able to face and to think about. And the reason why you should do it, this is kol zeh kedei lahachin atzmo lachzar, to prepare him to do tshuva, v'yer mishnasa. It means there is a feeling of, a person feels sick. But what is it? Why you could say? Why do I have to think about these terrible feelings? The sword going on. I mean, it's true. I may feel that way, but it's you'd say it's an emotional thing. In reality, his death doesn't really affect me. So you'll say I have a fear, and it makes me think I'm going to die. But it's really not rational. Him dying has nothing to do with me, and there's no causation between his death and my death, and there's nothing to do with to say because he dies now I'm going to die. It doesn't follow. So you may say, why should I do this? Why should I? It's true, I feel this way, but maybe I should deny those feelings. They're just coming from my irrational nature, and it's not really a thought-out thing. So why should I think this? It may be that it's normal to think that, but why should I? So as it says, kol zek de lachin atzma lashav. Lachzav, yor mishnaso. It means those feelings are good. It means God implanted that those feelings are part of the human nature, and they're part of what allows a person to do tshuva. People don't, it's hard to do tshuva. We need things like this. And a person should not take those emotions. They may stem from an irrational thing, but there is an underlying truth to the thing, which is that there is a reality that means then always. Now, it's true, you're thinking of it because you feel with your friend, and there may be some sort of a emotional thing which generates them at this particular moment, but they are true feelings, and they're always true. So therefore, it's appropriate to go with them. The feeling of being sick, feeling sick about yourself, is something which you should utilize for your own good. And that's the thing that's bringing the pasuk for. Hikiso son velo chalo. Not that they should do tshuva, but they should feel sick. I hit them, you hit them, but they didn't feel sick. There's a certain, the Navi is endorsing that feeling. And it's saying that you're supposed to use that feeling. Now that feeling could be brought up by God punishing the Klal Yisrael, or by your family member dying. And if you think about it, they really are different, because one of them, rationality dictates that it's onesh, and the other one, there's no rationality which dictates that necessarily. But your emotion isn't rational. The emotion of feeling sick is because of your attachment to your life and to your values, and the pain of the tragedy shakes you up and makes you start feeling afraid. And makes you wake up and from your slumber. But the Navi is endorsing that feeling as a stimulus for tshuva. So the feeling is there. The feeling isn't... See, if it just said the Navi says, I hit them and they didn't think about tshuva, so you say, yeah, then it's appropriate to think about tshuva. But who says when my family member dies that's appropriate? But it's not saying they hit them and didn't do tshuva. It's they hit them and they didn't feel sick. They didn't have an emotional response. And the value of that response, as the Navi continues, is a man of Lasha, the Hindu Tshuva. So you see the Torah the Navi's holding is that feeling is appropriate to foster, to hold on to not harden yourself like a rock, but to hold on to that feeling and use it as a tool of Tshuva. So that same feeling, it's the same feeling, even though it may not be rationally, it's not the event, the rational analysis of the events aren't the same. One event rationally is Onash. The other events rationally could be minagola. But the emotional idea, the feeling is the same, and the reality of the fact that there is a Midas Adin, and a person should always do tshuva because that Midas Adin is the same. So the only question is am I supposed to take that feeling and use it, or what's the appropriate human response to that feeling? Do I say it's irrational, it's stemming from some irrational thing, and I forget it, close it off, ignore that sick feeling? Or am I supposed to continue that sick feeling? Think about that. Pretend, imagine a sword on my shoulder. I should live with the sword and utilize it for tshuva. You see, the Navi holds that feeling helps the person. And so too here, I should use that feeling. But they're not exactly identical, but it's trying to show from the Navi the fact that the natural feeling of waking up and feeling sick is something which a person, the Navi hold, is, although it stems from an irrational source, is an appropriate tool to use and to remind you of the underlying reality of the situation. But the reality of the situation in the case of the Navi is that God is punishing the Jewish people. The reality of this is that you're immortal, and just like your relative could die, you could die. And therefore there's always, death is always, should always be part of a person's life. And the Chabura thing is clear. I mean, I think it's probably implicit, but it doesn't... technical Avelos is only for your Krovim. But this feeling, it does not limit it to that. I mean, there's no halacha of your group. I mean, there's no... You can understand the halacha, you can't have a form like that. A Chiyuv Avelos for your group. I mean, there's no halachic category. There's no definition of the thing. It's a very loose, subjective definition. Your close relatives is halachic, is intrinsic people who you have Avelos for. But the emotions of the thing, the reality and the way it affects a person, your group could also do that. In a philosophical discussion, the same thing could be aroused when it's your friend or your family member. But in a halachic discussion, you can't say you mourn for your friend. What's your friend? What's the definition of a friend? There's no halachic form like that. But the Rambam is going away from the techno halacha of Avelis and digressing into the perfection and the way a person should feel about the thing. And it could be anyways, is that perhaps there's other reasons why there's no Avelos for your friends, but for your family members. This is just picking one aspect of Avelos. Is this idea of waking you up to your mortality and to tshuva, that's the same. That aspect is really the same by your friend and by your family member. But there's no Avelos by your friend. By the way, another wake-up call is the shofar. If you look at the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva, I believe it's Perek Gimel, Zion or Chas, around there, I think. If you can't find it, you can ask me. But it's a very, very similar description of the Rambam, which is that not everyone has the fortune, so to speak. I hate to use the, you know, but there's a certain fortune of having the experience of Avelis to help us. Again, it's tragic, but at the same time, it does benefit a person. Not everyone has that experience, but everyone has Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is also designed to be a wake-up call. And it's an interesting study how it works. I'm not explaining how it works. Maybe because Yom HaDin, the idea of your own death, right? I mean, we are thinking about, right, the Yom HaDin, that your God is judging you, or you're being judged today, Chayim, Olam Habas. But there's an idea of a shofar, which the Rambam says, a Rema, is that it will wake up from your slumber. It could be the Din. I mean, it's a good chance it has to do with Din. It's in the Perek there, the Rambam talks about Din. But Din also, the fact that Din, a day of judgment, where God is judged, or your judgment of life or death is determined, also wakes you up to your mortality. So it could be done through a day like Rosh Hashanah, or it could be done all year round through a serious event like death. But shofar is part of the calendar and part of the intrinsic halachic system, the universal wake-up call. There's like a personal wake-up call, and there's a universal wake-up call. If you look at the Rambam, it's in there in Tshuva. It's very, very similar, the way he describes it. Not exactly the same. And when I learned this thing this morning, I wanted to compare and contrast them. But I ended up just getting lost in this Rambam, and I didn't get to do that. But it would be interesting to compare and contrast and see if they're exactly the same, are they a little bit the same. So, yeah. So I don't know, perhaps someone could do that. It would be an interesting study. But so I'm focusing more on this one, how this one works. But it would be interesting in this context. Let's see if it's, you know, some insights open up and we're looking more at that one. The thing is, Rome's not trying to claim that when your relative dies, God's punishing you. And therefore you should do tshuva. Because like Josh said, it's not true. My family member dies, therefore it means God's punishing me. Maybe, maybe not. I mean, it could be that's true, but I mean, who said? Maybe he's whatever, punishing him, or it's a natural thing. Maybe he's reached his time. But it's not saying that. The Rambam's not claiming that just like there it was a punishment, so here it's a punishment. Because there it's not a punishment, because there is Klal Yisrael, and therefore it makes sense that it's punishment. Here there's no evidence of that. I'm saying the Rambam's showing from there is just like over there you see that a person, the event causes a certain internal feeling of sick about oneself, and the Navi holds that you should have used that. That should be used to do tshuva. So to here it should be used to do tshuva. But the content of the tshuva is different. There it's tshuva because God's punishing you. Here it's tshuva because you're mortal and you've fallen asleep. You've forgotten about the world of truth. But the point at hand that the Rambam is defending why it's appropriate to think of yourself in this way and to think of the sword and to think of these morbid feelings. Person, you say morbidity, a person normally, you could have said his Torah doesn't hold by being morbid. Don't think about these scary thoughts and all these things. It's morbid feelings that are aroused by some event, but whatever. Just push them out of your mind. Torah's only no. Otherwise, the Navi can't criticize them. They didn't feel sick. Say they shouldn't have felt sick. They should have done tshuva. Say you hit them and they didn't do tshuva. Don't say they didn't feel sick. Why should they feel sick? Feeling sick is just an emotion. Apparently the Navi holds it's an emotion, but it's a good emotion and you should keep it and you should use it. And a person needs his emotions to propel him to do tshuva. It's not easy to do tshuva. And when you get opportunities where you feel sick and you have certain types of feelings that are aroused by tragic events, there are ample good opportunities that really shake your world. And don't say your world shouldn't be shaken. Your world should be shaken. There's a value to shaking your world. Not to stay that way forever, but it should make a mark on your life. And that light, that mark could help you in your future pursuits. The Torah holds by using your emotions. Let's say guilt. Person wants to do a sin, so you may feel guilty. Now you say guilt does not really stem from a rational thing. It's some superego, whatever. A psychologist could explain it very well. But at the same time, it's God gave it to us, like by Adam Arishon, if you study that whole parsha, but it's a tool that allows you to not go straight away to your taiva. And the guilt maybe is a tool that stops you. It gives you a moment's pause. Use it. Don't say, guilt, that's irrational. That's whatever. That's a lola shma. That's whatever. You got to use these things. Now, of course, it doesn't mean you just act out of guilt. You got to stop. And it's not an end. Guilt is not an end. Because sometimes your guilt will tell you, don't kill Agag. Or don't kill a bad guy. Or don't whatever. Guilt alone could cause you to do bad things. Corrupt things. But at the same time, it usually gives you a moment's pause to stop and think. And then you have to think. And then you have to make a good rational decision. But if you didn't have guilt, then you may not have a moment even to think. You may just go straight away into the chait, and it would be too strong, you'd be overpowered. The guilt gives you a moment. So the thing is, the Torah holds about emotions, is we have different emotions which could be helpful. But we can't live purely following the emotions. Because they're not really they don't stem from a rational source. But at the same time, they are helpful. And they could be used appropriately when in consonance with the person's rationality. And don't just say, this morbidity, this feeling of fright that I have when my relative dies is irrational, forget it. No, it's true it's irrational. It comes from an irrational source, but don't forget it. It's important to think of your own mortality, and if this is what reminds you of it, then go with it. Don't shut it off. Use it. Use it to be able to face the reality which you can't face on a regular basis. That's what you're right. Matt's saying it's true. You can't constantly think about these things. You won't be able to live. That's what it says. For 3 days it's on your shoulder. 7 days until then it's in this on the corner of your house. And then it's in the street. Passes you in the street. So a person can't really live like that. But at the same time, just because I can't live like that permanently doesn't mean that it doesn't have any value temporarily. And there's a certain type of a focus that a person could have in that moment. And it's a painful 3 days. That's what's 3 days for Bechi. 3 days of crying. It's a crying, it's a sad, it's a terrible 3 days. And there's a healing process. But those 3 days have a value. And even at the end of the day, it passes you in the street. It means it still exists, but you're not always thinking about it. But from time to time, you do. From time to time, you do. And time to time, it doesn't prevent your functioning. You can still function. You just from time to time. It could be depressing once in a while. And same thing with guilt. I mean, if a person's walking around all day long feeling guilty about stuff that you can't live, but it doesn't mean that there are certain things which could arouse a person's guilt, and a person should at least make note that I feel guilty now. Is this rational? Is this guilt? Is this guilt tipping me off to something? Is it in line with something which is rational, or is it merely guilt and there's no rational side to it, and therefore I'll just ignore it? And then a person should be able to ignore it. I mean, crippled by guilt, if guilt is too strong, a person is crippled. That's not good either. That's a guy who's neurotic and whatever. But there's a certain normal guilt that is a good. I mean, I think that's you could say. I mean, I'm never sure about this, but you could say that's from the Yetzer Tov. Yetzer Hara and Yetzer Tov. It's a Yetzer. It's also a Yetzer. I mean, there are different senses which it's used, but there's Yetzer Hara and Yetzer Tov. They're both inclinations. They're both, so to speak, emotions. But one is in general, guilt is in line with the good. In general, the taivas are in line with the bad. But they're in both not the mind and the rationality. The mind uses them. I'm not sure. I think Yetzer Hara could be used. Yetzer Tov could be used like that. I think Yetzer Tov also could be used to mean your chachma, your intellect. You know, but there's a certain sense of calling them both the Yetzer, because it's also an inclination. It's closer to Tov. But you can't just follow that either. But if it becomes too much, then you're right. It is dangerous. But just because it's too much, it's bad, doesn't mean in a little bit it's also bad. I mean, a person has to balance. But you know, there is a balance. Just because in extreme something is bad doesn't mean in moderation is bad. That would be wrong. That's what Yonah says. You remove the Yetzer Hara, there's a chazal, says chickens didn't lay eggs or whatever. It's a certain instinct. So the sexual instinct is says Yetzer Hara. But if a person is having sex to have kids and to build a house and whatever, that's not the Yetzer Hara. I mean, in general, the sexual instinct is ra. It's in line. In general, it's in line. It brings a person away from truth. But just the Yetzer Hara could be, that part of man could be used for good, and the Yetzer Tov part of man could be used for bad. They're not these things. Yeah, ra and tov ultimately comes from your mind determining what's ra and tov. But in general, your sexual drive leads you towards the crops, the bad things, and your guilt protects you, and gives you good things. In general, but on a percentage type of a thing, maybe 80-90%, I don't know, whatever. But whatever, you could argue the percentages. But if a person follows either Yetzer, he's not going to live properly. That's not the way to live. The Torah doesn't know about living like that. You have to live with Chachma and use your Yetzers. You have to have Shnei Yetzeracha, right? It's because also, I feel this is based on the Pasuk. Chol Avavcha. It says B'Shnei Yetzeracha. Your Yetzer Tov and Yetzer Ra. Sickness also. You're sick. I could use that to remind you of mortality. Don't just run away. For certain times, certain things are good to remind you of your place in life. I mean, the person needs things like that. But you could use it and then turn to God and tefillah. That's also appropriate. It doesn't mean you want to be sick. Just because you gain something from mourning doesn't mean you want mourning. But it happens. It's part of life. And there's what to be gained from it. Doesn't mean you should daven in for mourning, and you shouldn't ask God to heal your mourning and to allow you to suffer, to deal with the suffering. But things aren't so simple. Bad things could have good consequences. But they're still going to be bad. Still be painful and bad. Yeah, so just to tie it together here, is it's a tainus today, and it's always appropriate to do tshuva. And even though we're not necessarily in the middle of a period of mourning for a loved, a lost one, but there's always the ideas of tshuva, and the ideas in this are really appropriate always. So again, it doesn't mean it's impossible to feel the sword and to think about the one's mortality and to wake up at other points of the year. I mean, a tainus is a time also which could function in that capacity, just like Rosh Hashanah could. But But it's a day, and that's the idea. It's important on Tainus to do tshuva, because it's hard for us to do tshuva on a regular basis. But at least there are certain times a year that could wake us up and to cause us to take stock. And that's why I thought it would be good to do this today, because even though it's not directly about Tainus, but Tainus is about tshuva. And we take a step back from our regular lives and from eating and from our taivos, and, you know, and it could focus us on, give us the opportunity to focus on tshuva, on bettering ourselves. So hopefully we could all be successful in doing that. Alrighty.